Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here to present the fourth show in the series of shows related to financial literacy, April being Financial Literacy Month. And we're honored today to have Ray Kirk. Ray Kirk was the former OPM manager for Benefit Officers Training and Development. Did I say that right, Ray?
You got it right, Bob.
Okay. Great to have you here. We've known each other for many years and seen each other at conferences. And now to do a show together, I'm kind of honored here. I'm going to learn a bunch.
Well, thanks, Bob. I'm happy to be here.
All righty. So financial literacy, I guess, means different things to different people. Somebody doesn't have a clue, say, oh, gee, I have to learn another language. Somebody says, I know it all. But we all fit into that spectrum someplace. But let's start at the basics, because I know OPM really does care. And don't they have like a five-part financial literacy goal? Am I overstretching that?
Well, it's actually broader than just OPM. There's the Financial Literacy and Education Commission, which was established by Congress about 5 years ago. And it's the commission is made up of 21 agencies who all have some sort of financial education or literacy program as part of their overall agency mission. And so they have the broad focus of developing a government-wide strategy for coordinating those programs. And an OPM, with a focus on employees, has a more targeted focus that than a strategy that they developed. But I think as a good starting point, that you can look at the definition that the Financial Literacy and Education Commission adopted for just what financial literacy is. Because as you mentioned, there's everybody has their own idea about what we're talking about. So the commission's definition is that financial literacy is the ability to make informed judgments and take effective actions regarding your current and future use and management of money. So really, the long-term goal is to get financial security, you know, and how you piece that together. Because financial literacy is a big problem. A lot of people are on very shaky ground. That one of the kind of a measure of that, or give you an indication of it, last fall, when the government had to shut down, that TSP had a doubling in the number of people who had hardship withdrawals, because their financial situation is just so fragile that the idea of missing a pay period or two of checks just would essentially put them over the financial edge. And so they had to tap into their thrift savings plan to make that up, or the threat of making that up. And then other indicators that how fragile the situation is, the FINRA, which is a regulator for securities dealers, did a financial capability study, and they asked as part of the study five pretty basic financial questions that dealt with things like compound interest, the home mortgage payments, the risk of about bonds and what happens when interest rates change. And of the five questions, only 39% of the people were able to answer four of the questions right, and only 14% got them all right. And these are really fundamental building blocks for financial literacy and the ability to then have a secure financial future.
Okay. And on my side of the world, I'm a tax and finance type, but I will meet people and they'll say, we have X dollars saved. And you know, in a moment, it's a lot of money. In a lifetime, it's not. And so they go, I might have $100,000 saved. I might have $200,000 saved. I'm not necessarily talking about feds, but feds fit into this as well. And if you don't have anything else other than that, while it's a lot of money, it's not going to be a lot of money if it's your sole source of income. Feds, fortunately, at a minimum, CSRS or offset type, would have a nice annuity, and the offset might have Social Security as well. But the FERS individual actually has three sources, but they have to work at the other two to make sure that it fits well with the third, I won't say the third, it really is the first, their annuity. Nice, but not as nice as CSRS, so it's got to be made up some other way. And they have a very nice thrift savings plan match, and they have Social Security. I'm not so sure they always understand that is three different things. And our friend Tammy Flanagan has written some articles in GovExec on comparing somebody in FERS, somebody at CSRS, normal career. And, you know, the idea that FERS is not as good as CSRS doesn't hold under that microscope.
Right. You're absolutely right. In fact, in the design of FERS back in the mid-80s when Congress was considering it, one of the goals they were trying to set was that people had similar career earnings, so say someone earning $40,000, would have under CSRS and FERS, their aggregate benefit would be the same when they retire. So as you mentioned, CSRS is pretty much a one-benefit system, but FERS people have three components, the Social Security, the Thrift Savings Plan, and then they get an annuity from the Office of Personnel Management. And the goal was the sum of those three, if you're active in your Thrift Savings Plan, which is then the critical element, equals or potentially could be greater than what a CSRS person with a similar career history is going to get.
Okay. I should mention also that our friend Tammy Flanagan is more than a friend. She's the senior benefit director. She also writes a weekly column in GovExec. And when her busy schedule allows, she's the co-host of the show. But her busy schedule is busy. Anyway, so, yeah, I've traveled sometimes we're inside the Beltway, but when I go outside the Beltway to do a seminar or to do whatever, I'm amazed at the lack of knowledge of what they have. And I don't know how you get to that. I like the publications that come from OPM. Labor Department has a nice one as well. And, they're graphically understandable for somebody that might not be fluent in financial ease. And I'm not saying that I am. I think I understand it. But some people don't even understand that.
I think you're absolutely right. The lack of knowledge is really a critical problem. And it's one of the perspective that OPM had or still has in dealing with the issue is that you really have to think about it as a shared responsibility. That OPM and the Thrift Savings Plan and the Social Security for that component put out a lot of really useful information. But it's up to the agencies to have a responsibility and make sure their employees have some understanding of how those benefits fit together. And then it's also up to the employees to do something proactive. You can't just sit back and have everything happen magically to you, and particularly for FERS employees, because you have to, from day one, think about this Thrift Savings Plan. I mean, there's a real good chance for a lot of employees, the Thrift Savings Plan is going to be the biggest component of those three levels of their retirement benefit. You know, Tammy in her article last week just talked about some TSP millionaires, people who have, by starting to invest earlier in their career and staying with it throughout their career, have managed to have TSP accounts of $1 million.
And what was nice about that article, it wasn't somebody that brought in money from the outside world, because somebody can join the federal service, and if they had a 401k plan, generally speaking, they can move that money into the thrift. This was a homegrown one.
Right. Someone who starts earlier in their career. And one of the things that the thrift plan to emphasize that is they, a couple of years ago, went to auto enrollment so that new employees automatically are enrolled in the thrift savings plan at a 3% level. So they're at least getting some of the government match, but it's really critical that FERS employees start early. Unfortunately, they don't think about that. As you mentioned, that people early in their career, young employees, figure retirement is decades away and I don't have to think about it. But if you don't start thinking about it early, then you get surprised at the end.
Okay. The first show in this succession of financial literacy show, we drilled into the TSP and really dissected each one of the funds. What is it? You know, what is the C fund? Well, it's stocks, and what was the profile and profile of each, and also looked at the good, bad, and the ugly that could happen. No emphasis on the ugly, but when you move outside of a protected environment like the G, there's an awful term that they use. It's called risk. But, you know, people go, I don't want risk. Well, risk is, you know, there's a guarantee, and anything else is not a guarantee. It might be risky. But if you take the risk and it's moderate, you might be a whole lot better off than if you just stayed with your hard hat on and pulled the covers over in the G fund. Nothing wrong with the G fund. But I don't know if it should be your first investment and your only investment during your career.
Right. And people have to think about the long term. I mean, yes, there is risk, and about 3 years ago when the stock market dropped, it was a pretty dramatic event for people who had a lot of money invested in the stocks. But you're not investing for a couple of years. I mean, a new employee is investing for 30, 35 years. And so the stock market has a lot of gyrations during that time. So you have to keep that in focus. And one of the ways that people in the thrift plan, I'm sure you talked about this a couple of weeks ago, is the L funds that allow some level of professional management and helping people determine what the distribution, the diversity in their funds, so that they balance out some of that risk factor with the stability and that comes with things like the G fund.
Yeah, even within the L funds at the different stratifications, there's an L fund that's short-term, medium-term, long-term, as far as one's horizon is to when they'll access it. They use this term called rebalancing, but they do it daily. Now, as an individual investor or even investors sometimes in mutual funds, they don't rebalance it every day. Rebalancing means, let's move from here to here under the potential that there might be greater reward by moving out of one into another. But again, I don't want to get into that show. Somebody can listen to that show. And the show last week, we had a financial planner on, Joe Sullender and Tammy. And it was nice to watch them play tennis with their questions. And I just I listened and got even more educated. Now, with regards to the agencies, are there sites that people can go to? And you and I can talk, and I think we understand this, but somebody listening might say, you know, I understand what you all are talking about, but how can I put something in front of me? I know Labor had, I haven't looked at it probably in a year or so, but they really had a nice, and it was basic, and it walked you through to, you know, mid-level. And OPM got a site?
Right. OPM has a lot of information, and the information at OPM, OPM is, I'd say, primarily focused on the benefits that you have. That the there's a lot of valuable information for employees about the insurance programs, health insurance, life insurance, dental vision insurance, long-term care insurance. There's a lot of information about the retirement. And there's as much detail as you want up to the regulations and the law, but much of the material on the OPM site is geared toward the employee and answering their questions, a lot of FAQs, and targeting exactly what you need. The Thrift Savings Plan has a site that's very geared toward providing information to employees to understand the plan, understand what their options are, understand the history of the plans, the kind of stuff you talked about a couple weeks ago. And then Social Security has a really good site. They're very targeted toward providing information to the social people about their Social Security benefits and what they should be doing, not only when they're applying for Social Security, but throughout their lifetimes. And as you mentioned, the Department of Labor, which has responsibility kind of for retirement plans, non-government retirement plans, and they have a lot of information that just talks about planning for retirement.
Actually, I've printed it out, and I, to be frank, used some of the thought concepts in my seminar talks. As far as OPM, is there a site that you have that you could tell us? Probably many, and it's maybe an unfair question to ask, but is there a central site for financial literacy? For somebody that said, okay, I've heard financial literacy enough, I want to become literate.
Well, I think if someone is interested in financial literacy, probably the best site to start at is mymoney.gov, so www.mymoney.gov. And that's a site put together by the Financial Literacy and Education Commission. So it has resources on that site from all of the 21 agencies that are members of the commission. So it have information that OPM has about retirement benefits and insurance. We have information from places like the Federal Insurance Deposit Corporation, talking about savings or bank things, has Federal Reserve as a member. So a lot of those agencies have really good sites, and mymoney.gov provides a link to those sites, and so you're not just fishing around throughout the web.
There's I'm sure this links in, that site links into this other one. I like this. Now it's called the Ballpark Estimator, and that's exactly what it is. It gives you an idea: are you in the ballpark or not? Are you on the right path? And then you can change it, and it graphically very nice presentation, and the presentation might come out towards the end of one's normal life expectancy where there's a red light, so you may run out of money and unless you do something, so you go back. And you don't need to be a financial wizard to use this. And I believe they have one just for feds as well.
Right. There's one, and that's available on the OPM website. It should be opm.gov/benefits. And on that page, you can find a link to the federal ballpark estimate. And as you said, it allows somebody to get a ballpark estimate of what their how close to their savings goal they are. So the federal ballpark estimate allows you to put in information about yourself, and how much money you plan to be so you are saving, how much you're planning to be saving, and when you plan to retire. And then it includes in the estimate the federal benefits that you're going to receive, the retirement benefits, projection of Social Security, and looks at the projection of your thrift savings plan, and then tells you how close to being on target are you. Are you on target to reach your savings goal, or are you behind on target? And if you're behind, how much more you should be saving each pay period to start getting yourself back on track.
I think what's nice about this one, too, is I don't care what age you are, you can use it. So it could be somebody at the beginning of a career, and they might not have everything focused as to what they need or even what they spend at that point. But then late, early career, mid-career, definitely mid-career, and later on, when it gives you the message at the end, if you're not hitting your target, this is what you have to save. And sometimes that number is more than what people make. So it gets back to almost the first question that we discussed last week with Joe. How much does somebody spend? And a lot of times people say, well, this is what I need. Well, it's like I was using the expression before we went on air. If you fill your car up with gas to go on a journey, well, how much gas do you need? And, you know, if you go too fast at the beginning, you're going to have to pull over and refill. Well, but you just can't refill money. So the engine needs gas. Gas is your savings, your annuity, your Social Security, your thrift. And then what do you spend? And not that those three are going to pay everything that you're going to need to spend, because somebody gets in the middle called taxes. So you're going to have X, but you're going to pay taxes. Now, taxes vary depending on what you get. Social Security is tax-friendly. The annuity is moderately tax-friendly. The thrift, I'm not saying anything bad, it's not tax-friendly. Everything that comes out of it, with the exception of money in the Roth TSP, the other one, it's fully taxable for the most part. There's some people that military folks in combat could have a small portion that's non-taxable. But nonetheless, the reason that it's fully taxable, nothing's ever been taxed. The money that went in, the individual reserve got a tax benefit when it went in, and when it grew, there's never been any taxes. So Greg Long, the director of the thrift, has a great expression, pay me now or pay me later. So if you use the traditional thrift, it's pay me later. You put the money in, but when it comes back out, I'm going to be there looking to collect something. Anyway, I'm getting a little bit off subject here, but it all ties in together. Somebody has to have a feel for how to work with these things, and if they don't, you can generally get help. They can listen to this show. Now, you mentioned Social Security. We had one whole show on Social Security. It was very basic and then advanced. And, you know, how does somebody qualify? How does somebody not qualify? You know, what's the incentive that once you do become of age, do you take it or do you wait a while? And there was no answer for everybody, but if you can afford not to take it, it might make sense to take it later, at least now, while there's a pretty nice bump up each year for not taking it. But anyway, you should listen to the show, and we had Lester Austin on, who unfortunately is going to retire, or fortunately going to, depending on how you look at it. But I don't know that he can come on the show anymore as a member of Social Security's team, but he certainly can come on and talk about how it works. And that one's, to me, that one's hard for me to understand. I mean, I'm an accountant. And I go, okay, what's the relevance? And if I put the money away, how do I fit into this? And as Tammy has often mentioned, it's called needs-based. It's really key to somebody that didn't make that much during their career, that they are provided a greater Social Security benefit percentage-wise than somebody that did really well. And makes sense.
Right. I think you're bringing up a topic that a lot of people don't think about, and that's, what's my lifetime income stream going to be?
Mm.
That when I retire, I mean, when I'm working, I'm getting a paycheck every month, and I know what that is, and hopefully you're able to live on that paycheck. I mean, and one piece of retirement advice is, if you can't live on the paycheck when you're working full-time, you're not going to be able to live on your retirement income. So you better start planning on how you're going to fill in those gaps, that lifetime income stream. But one of the problems that people have is figuring out just what that's going to be. Social Security does a good job of telling you, what is your monthly payment going to be? You can go to get a Social Security statement that they used to mail out to everybody every year, but now they have, because of budget constraints, they don't do that. But you can go on their website and get it. In just a couple minutes, get a projection of your Social Security benefit. You can get a projection of your retirement benefit, the OPM, the FERS retirement benefit, or the CERS benefit. And TSP is really good because every year in their annual statement, they tell you on the statement what that annuity would be worth in monthly payments. So you can put those three sources of income together and at least see how much money you have, and then start figuring out, is that going to meet my needs? And that's the real challenge. And that interacts with a lot of other things, because if you're going to live in Manhattan, New York, your needs are going to be a lot different than if you're going to live in Manhattan, Kansas. You know, so it's
well put. Anyway, so let's now shift back into what we were talking about. The Financial Literacy Council. What is the council? Is it made up of just feds? Does private industry participate in this?
The Financial Literacy and Education Commission is just feds, and its focus is on the program. As I mentioned, the member agencies are ones that have some sort of financial education mission. So it may be as OPM for taking care of federal employees, but some of them, like the Department of Labor, have their audience is every worker in the country. The Federal Reserve is a member, and it deals with everybody who has some kind of banking relationship. And the focus of the commission is to come up with, well, two things. One is to coordinate the programs of those agencies so that they speak with one voice or a common voice. And another is to educate people across the country, to come up with a national strategy and educate people across the country on financial literacy and increase the financial education efforts in the country. So one of the things that the Financial Literacy and Education Commission did is it tried to identify what are the basic components of financial literacy, and they came up with the My Money Five. And those are the building blocks of being financially literate. And the five building blocks are earning, saving and investing, protecting, spending, and borrowing. So that's how they organize a lot of the material on the mymoney.gov website.
Okay. Andrew just told me, and I was looking the wrong way. Sorry, Andrew. We have a phone call.
Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling.
I've learned more through your program than I think I have in basically my entire history with the court system. So thank you for being out there for all of us.
Well, the government has been kind to us, so we need to be kind to the government.
One of the problems that I'm having is I'm a FERS employee, so obviously one of my legs has been the thrift savings plan. But having been a mom and raising several children and then college and other catastrophic things that have happened along the way, we haven't been able to contribute as much as we would have liked to our thrift savings. So we're probably about 5 to 8 years from retirement, and I'm wondering, because of the caps and whatnot, are there any other potential solutions outside of thrift savings that you could recommend for catching up, or a better way to utilize what might be available and we're just not aware of?
Right. If you haven't maxed the thrift, and it's none of my business, but if you haven't maxed that, I'd max that before I went to the outside.
Okay.
What you have with the thrift is somewhat of a guarded investment. It's cautiously picked to be very safe. oftentimes you hear the term risk, but it's not like I'm going to risk all my money. If the G fund is guaranteed, there's no question you're going to earn X dollars depending on the interest rates at the time. If you move outside of that, there is risk that you won't have the guarantee. It isn't risk that you're going to lose all your money. So what I'm going at here is if I'm maybe not at the finish line, but if I don't do something between now and the finish line, I don't feel like I'm going to have enough gas in the car to take me to my journey. So I'd certainly look at that first. If you're, and please don't respond to this, if you're very financially literate, you might move outside the thrift, but you're not going to get any tax benefit for doing so. If you're mid-career, late mid-career, and that's what I guess, maybe early pre-retirement, the tax benefit is really going to argue in your favor to put money in the thrift, because for every dollar you put in there, a dollar goes to work. Now, when it comes out, every dollar you get is going to be subject to tax, but you'll be able to generate more inside the thrift than you could if you went outside the thrift, because most likely at this stage of the game, you wouldn't be able to deduct money going into an IRA. That's just my guess. The size of your income, if you have a dual income family, you're not going to get a deduction for it. So if I haven't hit the thrift, then I'm going there first. If you say, no, I've maximized the thrift, where would I go next? That's a hard one. You almost need a financial planner. We, as a company, we don't sell anything. We sell concepts. And we've had financial planners on the show, and I would say last week is a very good one. And the first one that we did, which was 2 weeks before that, same thing. They were both financial planners. The first week was more, okay, what's inside the thrift and what makes it good, bad, or otherwise, you know, each one of the funds. And the one last week was more, how are you going to get to your journey? How much are you spending, and how much of your retirement benefits? In your case, as Ray mentioned, it's a triple-decker sandwich. Your base FERS annuity, your Social Security, depending on when you take it or don't, and the TSP, again, depending on when you take it or don't. And I don't know if I'm answering your question. I don't have a magic pill to say you should buy Vanguard's healthcare fund. By the way, I'm not saying that. I don't. But you can look at some of these funds, and we have, I would say, an educated emailer. Emails us a lot, but made to comment once. Why? And I mentioned this on a prior show. Why don't they have the Vanguard healthcare fund in the TSP? And I just thought, I wonder what's in the Vanguard healthcare fund. So I Googled it, looked at their top 10 holdings, and darn if every one of them wasn't in the C fund. So they kind of had it. So if you're saying, well, gee, I really want this, but if you're going to have to buy it outside the thrift, you're not going to get the tax benefit. But the thrift between the C fund and the S fund cover 5,000 of the largest companies in the United States.
Okay.
I don't know if
much.
Did I answer you? I don't know that I don't feel like I did, but
And I've tried to do this. We have started maximizing the benefits, and I'm of the age where I was able to do the catch up, and now I'm taking a small second job that doesn't offer any of those benefits, and someone suggested that I would be eligible to do an additional Roth outside of TSP to a certain amount. And then also maybe look at just switching things around in the TSP. Obviously, I'm closer to retirement than not, so I'd be a little cautious about putting everything in the C, but I think bonds were suggested at one point on your show, and so I'm just trying to explore those different things.
Okay, let me, because you asked about the F fund, let's be real clear with the F fund. The F fund includes government bonds. Okay, now, but government bonds, if held to maturity, have never lost a dime. But government bonds, when the interest rates rise or falls, can go down in value, not that anybody lost anything, or they can go up in value. But more of the fund is corporate bonds. But these are the best corporate bonds. These aren't, you know, the gas station or the sub shop down the street. These are big companies. But you saw last year, I believe, the F fund had a good year, didn't it? Now, why? Because interest rates stayed low. It's the exact opposite of what you would think. If interest rates are low, the bonds will generally do well. If the interest rates start to creep, watch for the F fund to get hit. Didn't say you're going to lose anything, but when people see value lost, they get anxious. But there's another way to look at it. Every dollar that gets reinvested at a lower price. So I just mentioned the F fund because I think a number of people think it's all federal and it never is going to go down. It's not like the G fund. I'm not saying it's bad, but just watch interest rates in today's environment. Again, if I was so smart, I wouldn't be doing the show. But if you had to, if you had to guess on interest rates going up or down, you might want to guess in the medium to long term they're going up. But I don't know.
Okay.
And again, one more thing. I like what you said. Your friend suggested that you can put money into a Roth IRA. And, of course, you're not going to get a deduction, but you're never going to pay the taxes on it as well. But there are income ceilings with regards to a Roth IRA. And you did mention, I believe, that you're married. And it's a pretty high number. And if your income exceeds a certain amount, you can't put money into the voluntary contribution, and that's about $180,000. I mean, it's a lot, but just a side comment.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much, both of you.
Sure enough. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Right, one more thing I might add about the TSP, though the caller had maxed out TSP, so they weren't really looking for an option of instead of TSP. But when making those comparisons, to think about the costs, because TSP is incredibly low-cost plan, certainly compared to lots of other mutual funds that are out there. And over the long haul, just a small difference in the cost of administrative cost of a plan can really add up, because it's kind of the downside of compound interest works against you.
Yeah, good point, because when you look at it, you say, okay, so it's the lowest. You know, it's a 0.5%. That's huge over a long period of time. It was Albert Einstein, one of the miracles of Earth was the compounding interest. John Elliott always talks about that. And,
right.
It's just amazing what it does. But like you say, Ray, on the other side, the compounding of a higher cost over a long period of time is your TSP, your 401k, your IRA's enemy.
Right. And speaking of compound interest, that is one of the basic elements, you know, in looking at financial literacy, is understanding compound interest, because it can work for you if you're making investments. But if you have credit card debt and you're not paying off that loan, the credit card every month, then the interest is compounding too. So the miracle of compound interest is killing you on the on the credit card.
And your ability to save or to do whatever. All righty. There are three key elements to help achieve and maintain financial security. These are one of our talking points we talked about earlier. So what are the three keys?
Okay, the three keys, I think, are understanding and then planning and then scanning. So understanding is just, as we talked about, the understanding things like compound interest and the basic elements of financial literacy, and also understanding your benefits. Now, I spent decades interacting with employees and sometimes some pretty senior people in agencies, and it would be, well, it got to the point it no longer was shocking, but the lack of information is unbelievable. So I think a really important thing for federal employees is to reach out to their HR office and try to get information, and then go to the websites, go to OPM's website, and just educate themselves about what the benefits are. Because those benefits create a basic structure, kind of a foundation that you can build the rest of your financial plan on. Because you know, if you retire as a federal employee and you've had health insurance during your career, you can continue that health insurance. And that's a tremendous value. And it's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars in retirement savings because you have that insurance plan as a foundation. And that's true for many of the other plans. So it's really important that people understand just what their benefits are and how they're going to contribute to their financial stability when they retire, but also as their employees. That it just, as I say, is the building block. And then the other part of understanding would be to understand the basic elements of financial literacy. You know, learn about the My Money 5. Go to the MyMoney.gov website, and there's a lot of information about them. And it describes how those elements impact person at various stages in their career. That somebody that's early in their career, for example, on the thrift savings plan, you talked about the L funds and how it shifts the diversity of the funds over time. Because earlier in your career, you're more you're more capable to weather a bad risk. Because if the stock market turns down, you still have decades for it to recover. But late in your career, you've got to make adjustments, and you have to understand what you should be doing late in your career so that you balance your not only your TSP plan, but the rest of your financial life, so that it's structuring yourself for making that trip with that, filling up the gas tank for the one last time.
All right. Now, we've talked about traditional IRAs outside of the thrift. This wouldn't necessarily work with the thrift. And when one passes the age of 70 and a half, there's a required distribution. Although very small, there is a required distribution to come out of the money. And people will say in class, well, gee, I have money in the market, and if the market is down, I certainly don't want to be taking it out. But there's one way around that. It would be to say, okay, you have X dollars in your IRA, whether it's in several investments or whether it's in one. But there ought to be one that just ought to be kind of like short-term cash for this distribution. The other ones could be in midterm or longer-term investment so that you wouldn't have to take the money out of that. You have to take an allocation as if it was the whole, but it allows somebody to not subject the money that has to come out to any kind of risk of market decline and let it fully enjoy market upticks.
Right. And that kind of, that point bridges, I think, between understanding and planning, what we were talking about in our building blocks, because understanding those rules about the minimum distribution when you're 70 and a half, you know, helps you build a plan, as you pointed out, for where you might put your money. That one of the kind of the things that people don't do very much is to plan. There's a study done that showed that people spend more time planning a fancy dinner or buying a TV than they do on their retirement plan, on where they should put their retirement savings. You know, it's that dinner is going to be over in a few hours. The your retirement is going to last hopefully a lot longer than that. So it's worth spending a little more time on planning that than.
That's a great point, because in today's world, we read an awful lot about, I mean, there's a huge percentage of the population, the baby boomers, are heading towards that. And there's, I think, a significant percentage of the baby boomers that aren't ready for that. Now, the children of the baby boomers ought to be looking and say, I don't want that to happen to me. What can I do now? And it's to become financially literate. Not so that you can go out and teach a seminar on it, but just understand in your own thinking twice about spending a buck when you don't necessarily need it. I mean, if you need to, you need to. And I'm not saying that you should never go out, and I'm not saying that you should always look for the things that are about to expire in the grocery store because you get a better deal. You have to enjoy life a little bit, although my wife would laugh at that. But anyway, so that's part of the game. I mean, some of that's common sense more than it is basis points and the miracle of compounding of interest.
Right. I was interested to see in Tammy Flanagan's article last week on retirement planning, where she talked to some TSP millionaires that we mentioned earlier. And one person she spoke with he said the number one thing that helped him become a TSP millionaire was planning, that he did devote the time to understanding what his options were under TSP and the impact of making those contributions and going up to the maximum contributions when he's old enough to go to the catch-up contributions. So that's really a critical element in getting financially secure.
Okay. Now, as Ray mentioned, these shows, as well as Tammy's articles, they're all on our website, nitpinc.com. nitpinc.com. The firm, in over 30 years, has never sold anything. So there's no ads on there. There's no farming the emails and whatnot. But you can listen to archive shows. Today's show will be up about 2 o'clock, right, Andrew? And last week's show, the week's show, maybe a year before that. Tammy's articles are also on the website. So her articles, this was a good article for everybody. But sometimes she'll write about FERS. Sometimes she'll write about CSRS. But she generally tries to do it so that all readers would be of benefit. That's a great article. It's well written. It's bim, bam, it's to the point, and it doesn't drone on and on. And she even takes questions on it. And anyway, nitpinc.com. Now, for those of you that would like to email us a question that maybe you didn't have answered or that you would like in a future show, we're happy to do that, too. And it's somewhat the same name, but the beginning of it says for, F-O-R, your, Y-O-U-R, benefit, at NITPINC.com. For your benefit, at NITPINC.com. Somebody's saying, what is NITP? National Institute of Transition Planning. One of the ugliest names of corporate America, but that's why we call it NITP. Anyway, back to Ray. Sorry, Ray, for getting off into the weeds. So we got the three key elements. We've got places where we can go. We got seminars we can go to where it's not every agency, but close to pretty much every agency. Some agencies run these shows on their intranet. You all can run it through your intranet, anybody listening. And you can email us questions. We answer an awful lot of questions, and I gave you the email. But in when I teach, you teach benefits, which to me is the hardest subject of all of them. And people say, no, it's tax. I said, no, it's benefits, because the benefits are so... the basic benefits, I don't think, is hard to understand in its concept, but how to maximize it. Some people just aren't aware that if they worked in a summer job in the government 25 years ago, there might be an enhancement of their annuity, but they didn't know that. They want to make sure that that's accounted for. And I'm sure you felt, you didn't fight that, but you found that to be of interest through your long career.
Right, absolutely. And I mean, if you look at SERS, the retirement system, the older retirement system, although people always refer to FERS as the new system, it's now close to 30 years old. So it's not exactly a brand new system. But federal retirement program has been around since 1920. You know, and Congress has amended it many times. And that leads to a lot of the complexity and what makes it so hard for people to understand, because some of the provisions might... undid other things, or they have different expiration dates. So it just becomes very complicated. And it's all the more reason for people to take the time early in their career, and then ideal in middle of their career, and then, of course, at just before retirement, and do a review to scan where they were in their retirement planning and in their benefits planning, so that they have an understanding of what category they fit in. You mentioned, did those summer jobs count for retirement credit? And does the agency have those as part of the information they have about you? So once that's one of the things we urge people in the seminars, is to do their own listing of the service that they think should count toward retirement, and then get an estimate from their agency and compare it to the service that the agency is using. And if there's any conflict, to try to resolve that the earlier in their career, the better off they are, because it's easier to do it then. You don't want to try to be resolving an issue about whether that summer job that you had 20 years ago counted toward your retirement 2 weeks before you're ready to retire. I mean, it just creates an issue for the employee, for the agency, and then ultimately for OPM when it's trying to adjudicate the case.
Yeah, and this is, again, this is financial literacy, to become aware that this could benefit you. And one of the things I found, for somebody that maybe had a few years in the federal sector and left for whatever reason, but they were very close to the 5-year, I guess, window. And maybe they had some of this part-time work maybe back when they were younger, and if they could put all the pieces together. I remember this one. It's probably about 2 years ago, and we put the pieces together, and they hit the 5 years, the magic number for the coverage under, if I'm not mistaken, the health care. Is that right?
Am I? Well, 5 years to be eligible to get a retirement benefit.
Okay.
And then, and potentially for health care.
Potentially.
There's a 5-year rule for
health care,
too.
This is where I get lost with your stuff. All right. But I hear enough to be dangerous. Now, in your experience over the years, as well as some of the teaching, are there any questions that kind of pop out that you say to yourself, boy, that's surprisingly a good question, and it might fit into the show rather than just a benefits thing? If you don't, I got some.
Okay, well, why don't you start? I'll see if that have something pop in my mind.
Okay. Again, I'm an accountant, but understand the financial side. I don't understand fully the benefits side, but I'll get questions. Well, it's tax deductible, it must be good. Be it an investment, be it an expenditure to have a higher mortgage or the like. And I go, well, not necessarily. In order to spend a dollar, you have to earn a dollar. So the earnings would include Medicare, Social Security, and some other things that are somewhat unaffected by tax deductions. Now, if you spend a dollar and it's tax deductible, sure, but you spent the dollar. You shouldn't spend it for the tax deduction. It would be better to pay the taxes on it and save it, or if you had maxed out on your thrift. So I usually approach it that way, and people go, aren't you an accountant? I go, yeah, but taxes just aren't everything. And we have a caller.
How are you doing?
Everything's good. We're happy you called.
Okay, this is the question. My wife is retiring in June. She has her health care. Do the government pay for part of that when she retires?
I'm going to hit that ball to Ray.
Well, the good news for you is, yes, if she meets the basic criteria, which is she had health care for the 5 years prior to retiring, which in most cases would be true, then her health care eligibility continues into retirement, and it's exactly the same as though she was an employee. So the agency or the government is paying the same contribution, which for most health plans is about 75% of the premium, that you would have the same options of the different or during open season, that you could make elections of health plans. You can have a family plan. You can have the individual plan. So that's one of the very valuable benefits for a federal retirement plan, is that it continues that health insurance unaffected by retiring. It's just like you're an employee.
Okay, now one other question. Okay, we were trying to figure out, should I sign to waive the benefits, you know, the government, would a spouse leave benefits for the spouse when the spouse died? Should I sign, is that a good thing to sign and say I don't want benefits?
So you're talking about the survivor benefits in retirement?
Yeah.
Yes.
The pages.
Okay, now an important thing to remember, that would increase the amount of the annuity that your wife is receiving while she's alive. But then if your wife were to predecease you and you don't have a survivor benefit, then your eligibility for the health benefits ends. You have to be receiving a benefit from OPM in order to continue that health insurance. So,
okay.
So there would be, unless you have an independent way of getting the health insurance when you're retired, then you would lose that if you're not getting a spousal benefit. So one of the things you might look at is is your wife a FERS employee?
She's an old one.
Okay. Well, depending on what you decide in terms of the amount of survivor benefit that you need in dollars, as long as you're getting some kind of survivor benefit, and under the old system, the civil service retirement system, that allowed her to pick a survivor benefit of any amount. So she could leave you a survivor benefit that's only $1,000 a year, which would not then have a very big deduction from her retirement annuity. But it would give you an annuity if she were to predecease you, and that would continue your eligibility for health benefits.
Okay. Now, so can I get my own health benefits at the end of the open season?
Are you a federal employee too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, yes. You could have two individual plans. That would be another alternative then. If you're going to be retired and have your own health plan when you're retired, then having the spousal benefit for your wife wouldn't have an effect then, because you'd have your own entitlement to having health benefit plans.
Right. Right now I'm on hers. But if I sign that thing that waives me no benefits, is that a good thing to sign it? That's the question.
Well, that's really a financial planning decision.
Can I weigh in on that? None of my business, no response, please. You'd have to look at life expectancies. Now, no one knows what their life expectancy is. I mean, nobody knows that. But we might have a clue that either we're a descendant of Methuselah or we're not. All righty, so if we're a descendant of Methuselah, we're going to live a long time. But if maybe mothers, brothers, sisters, relatives didn't make it that long into retirement, then you need to look at that and say, that's not good.
Right.
And this works on both sides, you and hers. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. All righty, Ray. We're within the red zone. We have less than two. What do we got? A minute and a half? Okay. Final comments?
Well, I think it's to emphasize that we started out with, that it's important for people to try to take control of their financial destiny. The goal is financial security, both in the short term and the long term. And in order to do that, you have to understand both your benefits and basic components of financial literacy. Then you have to be monitoring, have a plan, and then you have to be monitoring those, your progress throughout your life.
Okay. This has been great. First of hopefully many. We're very happy to see that you're retired and happy and passing along this great information, doing some seminars, and we'll do some more shows. Tammy's teaching today. Otherwise, I know she would be here. And it would be a nice dynamic duo to listen to you two talk. I'll learn a lot. Anyway, thanks for listening. Tune in next week. We're going to actually have a duo, both with the last name Schaefer. One's a financial planner and one is an attorney. We'll be talking about wills, trust, and the like. Again, this is financial literacy. This is not to get way out there. And it should be a good show, as were the prior shows. And they're available, of course, on our website, nitpinc.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll be talking to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.